Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Unknown Zone. This is the talk show about the unusual. I'm your host, Dave Turco, with co-host Judy Sellens and our monthly guest, Mr. Gary McKinstry, the man, the myth, and the legend. He is a great psychic medium and tarot reader, all around wonderful person. And he'll be taking your calls today. And if anybody would like to call in, let me give you our number. The guest call-in number is 347-637-2956. And you can always find that right on our homepage. Sorry. Pardon me, I got to take a drink. Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Judy.
Hello. What kind of a drink are you taking?
Water.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Maybe if you got something stronger, it would help.
I'm not denying that. True, but don't want to complicate my multitude of issues either. Goodness gracious me. Anyhow.
Yes.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Well, it's nice to have Gary on with us again to,
It's true. And you know what I was going to say, Gary? You know what? Have you noticed? I know we talked about this before. We're on warp speed here.
Yes.
I was like, Gary was just on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it seems like, oh, it's been like 6 weeks or whatever, but it's like, wait a minute. This was at most 2 weeks ago. April went by so fast. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I don't seem that I remember April. It's kind of like it was a memory boom gone.
Yeah.
It's really, and this is the thing. So many people feel the same way about it. And that's what's kind of weird. Now, maybe there are other parts of the country, or the world, where it dragged, but not, at least in the Northeast U.S., it flew by. And I kept telling myself, February is a shorter month, but this thing, blink, done.
And
just really weird.
Wasn't exceptionally nice. You can't say, oh, the weather was so beautiful, we were all enjoying it.
Right.
Right.
More like, for some reason, it was the month that was.
I know, but you know what? It gets into the, how they're these theories that won't go away. And there was yet another one about scientists conclude this could actually just be, I think this is actually a Stephen Hawking again, another iteration of his idea that this whole thing is a supercomputer generation by some super advanced culture. Somewhere, which I don't actually believe, but there's some level to that where you know how you can fast forward the game.
Yeah.
Sometimes things happen.
Oh. Okay.
And
if we're in a supercomputer and this is a program, I wish he'd tweak it a little here and there.
Yeah, I know.
Oh yeah, major. That's where they get the old glitch in the matrix.
Yeah,
major glitch in this matrix. We have problems. But when you think about how slowly humanity groaned forward, with 1,000 years ago, 900 years ago, 800 years ago, there's no change. And life was shorter but longer in that nothing happened other than day-to-day drudgery, unless you were one of the 0.001%. Of, pampered poodles at the top. Life was really tough and long and hard day to day survival mode for most humans on the planet. Now we're on this crazy joyride of, I don't know even how to describe it. It's just a really sort of weird experience here. Where even though we still have the elites that we sort of complain about, who definitely lead a lifestyle that we can't even imagine. Here we are, and worldwide internet and communicating, and we don't even have to be together, and this is amazing stuff. But life is just flying by. That's how I see it anyway. But I don't think it's, I think it's more of a metaphor saying it's a supercomputer. You know, multidimensional, yeah, perhaps, whatever. But
remember when we did that program on how time was actually going, moving faster,
mm-hmm,
than it had been in the past?
Yeah.
We did a program on that, and I really believe that. I really believe that time is speeding up, and that, you know, it seems like I just get up and get something going in the morning, and by, you know, it's like late afternoon, and then it's, you know, nighttime again. And the whole day has just gone whip, whip, and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to agree, and I don't believe it's your perceptions. You know, it's
kind of
like, okay, we seem to jump or skip through, I'll use the term days, hours, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, bam, you're there, and bam, you're here. And I understand some of it's our own consciousness. You know, I think we edit out a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, that wasn't exactly memorable, so we'll just skip it.
Right.
I kind of think that's what happened with April. It wasn't exactly memorable.
No.
No, it just seems like, all, you know, it just seems like, geez, April's coming, it's going to be beautiful, and you know, that's when the weather really starts to change and the flowers start. And then it's like, I remember I went down to the grocery store, and then there was nothing in bloom. And then it seemed like 2 or 3 days later when I went down, it's like, where did all the flowers come from?
Oh, yeah, dig this. My what are the, lilacs are out.
Yeah.
When do they even leaf out, let alone have blooms? It's like, what? You know, it.
We've had a relatively sunless April, and
mm-hmm,
now May is kind of starting out the same.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the flowers totally notice it. So, you know, they're still going to bloom. Everything's coming out. But I don't think we're out there looking. You know, it's like, okay, it's another gloomy day, and all of a sudden, bam, it's here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Usually, you know, I've always enjoyed getting into April because it's, you know, it's Easter time, and it's everything starts getting really pretty, but sometimes you don't even get a whole lot of really nice flowers and stuff up until, like, God, maybe towards the end of the month. But this
mm-hmm
was, like, the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tulips were up. Everything was up. Daffodils were out. And it was like, where did they come from? Because they weren't here 2 days ago.
Miracle.
Yeah.
Gosh.
That's what we're in. Somebody pushed the flower button, and there you go.
Well, you know, speaking of what is the nature of reality, matrix, glitches, supercomputers, whatever, you know, a topic that we've covered many times on our show, either this specifically or tangentially, Gary, is Bigfoot. Sasquatch, what is it in relation to the UFOs and other cryptids? Because the thing is, it just continues throughout history. And I was going to bring this up because it sort of falls into the same category. And I like to cite where I get my information, Linda Moulton Howe's Earth Files. And she has this updated thing about Sasquatch that can't be killed with bullets and disappears in a flash of a light. Now, I only bring this up basically because it sort of goes in with what we sort of began with about the potential of this sort of being a some form of a predetermined gigantic DVD that somebody can make it go faster or slower. And Judith is actually the one that I know of that speculated that the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever you want to call it, has something to do with UFOs. And now there are these, apparently Western Pennsylvania is a big hotbed for them, along with the Black Panther and all these other cryptids, winged things, even dragon-like things flying around out there. And what people are reporting that you normally don't hear about is that, you know, in fact, they, you know, hunters were armed and they did shoot and nothing seemed to happen, only to see, for instance, a UFO sort of fly by, put a beam down, and Sasquatch run into the beam and then disappear, or just seem to have a flash of light and they disappear, which would again sort of suggest some multidimensional thing going on. And again, it's like this interface with a game, like, oh, let's introduce that character and see what happens. Yeah. It's real weird.
It's kind of like Mockingjay when they're on, I don't know if you've ever seen those movies.
I know what you mean, but no, I haven't, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, they have an island, and it's theoretically the people are on the island, and the programmers can basically put in whatever they need to.
Mm-hmm.
They can change, you know, they can put in large, like, wolves, whatever, and, you know, at certain times, if the ratings get slow, they pop a creature in, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it reminds me of.
Is Mockingjay, that was that a takeoff on Hunger Games?
Pardon me?
Was that from, like, the Hunger Games series, or?
Yeah, the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The programmers could, like, pop something in, you know, and say, okay, well, ratings are kind of down this month, so we're going to pop this in to see what they'll do.
Yep. Well, you know, the yogis said that anything you could ever think of, imagine, or dream of actually exists at some level of reality already, and that we just access it. And I think a lot of times these brilliant people, you know, in the arts, and we'll include, you know, people who come up with scripts for movies and authors and stuff like that in the arts, obviously. And I think they're picking up some form of reality. It seems far-fetched, but we do not have a physical structured reality that's immutable. There is some interplay of other dimensions here on Earth. Because one of the other things that they talk about is even in the snow, they will follow footprints and then they just stop. They just disappear, but there's not a ledge or a cave they went into.
Right.
It's that same thing. There's somehow these beings have to do with that, that they're literally coming in and out of our dimension.
Yeah.
Well, which brings you back to portals and vortexes and
right.
You know, whether it's derived from a UFO, whether the UFO and the Bigfoot use the same portal, whether they're interconnected, you know, would kind of make sense. If there's, let's say, a wormhole
mm-hmm.
portal that's created, why wouldn't the same thing as use the same portal?
Sure they would.
Right.
You know, let's say a vortex or portal has to, A, have a point of origin, and B, it has to have a finality where it ends. So possibly they're coming from the same place, and you could have more than one evolved species on the same place or the same plane.
Right. Oh, absolutely, as it is here, yeah.
Right. When I say place, I don't necessarily mean it's a physical place. It could be a dimensional space where, you know, you have being A, B, C, D, and, okay, it's open, so we all sort of come down at the same time. Possibly the UFOs are cleaning up the mess.
Could be.
You know, think of it this way. Maybe these things weren't supposed to come through the portal or, you know, the vortex. Maybe the UFO is here picking them up because it's like, okay, you know, we found you. We're taking you back now.
Interesting. Could be.
Kind of a nice theory, you know, like, okay, you know, we lost three Bigfoot, one dragon, and a couple of Black Panthers today. Let's go get them.
Exactly. And it's also why over the same areas they show up all the time. Because we know that the Earth is conducive to that, having these natural sort of portals when the conditions are right.
Wait, hold it now. Hang on a second.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, let's look at over the last month, you've had a giant, massive hole in the sun that emitted heavy-duty electromagnetic flux that was pelting the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a stronger electromagnetic mm-hmm. flux, there's a good chance it possibly opened up a dimensional area where suddenly it's like, oh boy, zones change, we can jump through.
Right.
We don't think of it like that. We just think of like, oh boy, my cell phone went a little crazy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if changing the whole topography of the electromagnetic field, this is going to basically create a rift where something can come through.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sort of maybe in the same category. You know that they found this purple ribbon of gas in our atmosphere? Have you heard about this one? It was reported by the University of Calgary just about a week ago. It's really wild. And so they sent up electric field instruments to 190 miles above the Earth to measure this gas ribbon. This is reported by the BBC. What they found was that the temperature of the gas ribbon's air was 3,000 degrees centigrade hotter inside the gas stream than outside it. And the gas ribbon was 15.5 miles wide, and the gas inside the ribbon was flowing at 6 kilometers per second, which is 13,000 miles per hour, which is 600 times faster than the air on either side of this ribbon. So again, what is causing this? They've never seen anything like it before, because they said, at first they thought, oh, wow, look at the aurora. And they realized it's not the aurora at all.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it has nothing to do with solar particles reacting with our magnetic field. And they don't know where it came from. And here it is.
Hmm.
I know.
Don't know what it does.
Yeah, exactly. They don't know what it does. But again, it's almost like if you look at it, I mean, you could call it a ribbon. It looks like a ribbon of light in the sky. This is over, you know, northern Canada, but so we're not going to see it. But nevertheless, it's, I don't know, a rip? Again, some sort of interface area. I mean, it's clearly, here's this, you know, way up high, 190 miles up there. Thing 15.5 miles wide, super hot, you know, 3,000 degrees hotter than the gas or the air or whatever on either side of it,
yeah.
And the particles inside are moving 600 times faster. What would have even caused that? You know, 190 miles up in the sky. It's kind of weird. But going on to these other things, down here, we had a few days ago, Judy, when was that crazy thunderstorm over us?
Oh, yeah.
This was wild. This was so wild because I woke up before
it seemed to pop, and all of a sudden it was here, and
yeah.
it was crazy.
Yeah. This was different, Gary. This was different. Now, I lived in Florida for a spell, and this was a Florida-sized thunderstorm, and we're not even in summer again, where this is just spring, right? Nothing major was really even forecast. You know, when they talk about the thunder, major thunderstorms could, you know, rip off roofs or whatever, you know, you hear about that. Not that it did that, but this is what happened. I woke up with a start. I didn't even bother to look at the clock, but it was definitely right around dawn, because it was starting to get a little bit light. You know, it wasn't really dark. So it was 5:30, I don't know, something like that, maybe. I heard this deafening booms. It definitely was not thunder of any form I've ever heard of. There was no rumble to it. There was no, you know, that electric crack you hear when lightning first strikes and you hear. Okay, none of that. Unbelievably loud. And I thought they were explosions. And I thought that, you know, there was something crazy was going on. I just can't even explain it. But one of the things that happens to me, I'm the type of person, I'm like the coal in the canary. I mean, the canary in the coal mine, or, you know, that person that can sense danger before it happens. It's just something I do. Don't know what happens. It's like, alert, alert. And 5 seconds later, then it happens. I'd be that type of person that, you know, 5 seconds before I get shot, I knew it was going to happen, but couldn't do anything about it. But whatever. Anyhow, and then a little bit of time passed, and then all of a sudden, regular lightning came. And it was a ferocious storm, don't get me wrong. But there have been, you know, I don't know, it's been a good 5 to 10 years now, that those mysterious sounds all over the world that people are recording. It reminded me more of that, because it was not faint. It was definitely in the sky. It was so loud. I've never heard anything like it. But then, you know, people were saying, yeah, the thunderstorm was right over us. And everybody was saying it was right over them. And it seemed to be. But those were typical crack, bam, boom type of thing. This was something else completely. So I don't know. It just seems like something's going on. It's some sort of like little tear in our reality. And so sounds and everything's coming through.
Our old buddy, you know.
Yeah.
They're pounding in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true. They're always claiming it's down, but I don't believe that.
No.
It's not operational anymore.
They spent too much money and built too much. Plus, we weren't the only ones with the HAARP units.
Correct.
Well, we know it. It's like everybody's got one.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, ours could be down. Russia has one. China has one. They've all got these, and they're all
trying
to do something. But they haven't figured out what they're doing with them yet.
Yeah, Australia has one.
Sure. So even if two out of three are down, somebody's pounding a hole in the atmosphere somewhere to see what's messing up.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. Sooner or later, somebody's going to find a way to mess up something. That's human nature. You know, it's like, oh, let's mess with it till we really do something.
You know,
the thing they got going that they were supposed to, I guess, stop working on for a while with that collider.
Yes.
And that's another thing that could cause a lot of problems too.
Absolutely. No, that Gary, that is absolutely true. See, this is what I also have thought all along about humanity. At least most of us don't seem to be natural to the earth. And we do the craziest thing is like, yeah, it's this big thing. We're constantly exploring. Like, let's poke our finger there. See what happens.
We'll mess with it till we destroy ourselves.
Right. Where other things seem to know, like Jesus, like for instance, yeah, let's go back to the Bible. Jesus would tell the people, look at the lilies in the field. Or, you know, basically, look at nature. How do they do it? Well, they all seem to know. It seems to be they belong here. We were sort of put here. I'm like, okay, now figure it out. Seems to me. Because we're not really natural. We have to wear clothes. We have to cook our food. We have to build houses.
Well, you're going back to that part where Jesus said, look at the lilies of the field. Somebody had to go out there after and cut them down. Oh, they're beautiful. I'll bring them home and then they'll die.
Oh, yeah. Let's look at something beautiful. Cut it off.
Yeah.
Chop it up. Stick it in. Unbelievable.
You know, or they dig them up and sell them. You know, I mean, this is the whole deal.
Yeah, dig this. Speaking of digging, so I have a bandit that has, I like to beautify things, and slowly but surely I add, like, you know, in the fall you'll have sales on, you know, spring bulbs. So I'll just buy, you know, a pack, like 8 of them or whatever, not a lot, and just put them on the side of the house. So, you know, first thing in the spring, I'm looking for them to pop up, and they do. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see what they look like. Dug up. You know, and it wasn't a skunk, you know, because you can tell when an animal has been. Somebody came, and then they came and took another clump about a week later.
Chipmunks love bulbs.
Mm. Yeah.
They will dig them out in whole and take them away.
Yeah, they do. We put a whole bunch of them. I had them out here in the yard, and the squirrels got them. And then we put a whole bunch of them up on my parents' grave.
Yep.
And we went up there, and they had dug them all out of the ground and took off of them all.
Okay, guys, I've had it where they've dug up the bulbs, and it's kind of messy. And sometimes, you know, some are taken, and they've sort of left some of them. This was a hole without any, both of them, these holes, without any scratch marks. And you know, when the dirt's been pulled away by the little paws? No,
they were just neater. You got neater ones than we got.
No. I've got a tulip bandit here.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Again,
we have a little garden right near the house, and my wife planted these beautiful bulbs. And by the way, they'll even wait till some of them mature because maybe they taste different.
Yeah.
As far as the signs of, they can go, we have some mulch in there, they can go under the mulch, take the bulb that looks undisturbed, and then you figure, okay, the bulb is gone, so you dig it up, and there's no sign of anything, and the bulb is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then one day you're watching, and the little chipmunk looks like he's at the Nordic Inn, you know, eating lobster.
Right.
So, as crazy as it sounds, when Judith said that these are neat chipmunks, do not downplay the maneuverability of a chipmunk.
Yeah.
True.
They're very good at it. And they don't share the bounty. They don't give it to anybody else. They take it for themselves a little bigger.
Yeah, well.
Okay, normally, and by the way, Gary, both you and I have to bow down to Judy. She is royalty, as it turns out. I found out last week.
I told you before, it was that my grandmother came from royalty. But it was an amazing thing because they had a whole thing on about Mary, Queen of Scots, and King James. And then it goes on and on and on. But evidently, when her son became King of England, from there on in, all of the people who ever sat on the throne, including to modern day, were related to Mary, Queen of Scots, through her son.
But I thought they got rid of... I thought that's what the English did, like the whole Jacobite revolt was to get rid of James, wasn't it?
King James the VII.
Well, of Scotland, is James the II of England, yeah.
And my, I mean, so that puts, that I don't know how many kings and queens on my grandmother's little, you know,
lick
your finger and eggs is another one. Because it goes to the Queen of England right now. She's like some sort of a cousin.
Judith has just taken over the state.
Hey, you know, maybe my brother keeps saying, maybe if I went over to Scotland, I could be an earl or something, you know.
An earl?
But he's like, maybe I'm some, you know, I could have a title or something.
And if I tell Donald Trump you have a nuke, maybe he'll want to meet with you.
This is a Donald free zone. You in Scotland, they're lairds. You're the laird lady.
Well, my great grandparents were lord and lady. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Laura they call laird over there.
Yeah. Well, that's because they got an accent. That's like my grandmother and her moots. And I didn't know what the moot was that was around the castle. I thought it was a river when I was a kid. And then when I was 16, somebody was talking about moats. And I'm going, oh, my God, my grandmother's talking about a moot. And it's a moat. But that was a Scottish accent.
Throw your rubbish in the moot, laddie.
I wanted to go fishing. As a kid, I thought I'd go fishing in the river around the castle because they lived in a castle.
Yeah, but them moots were no place to go fishing.
There was no fish in them.
We know it was dumped in those moot, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, anyway.
The privy emptied in the moot.
Yeah.
They're very organic. You know, I always enjoy when people tell me, I'd love to go back to those days and live that.
Oh, no, you wouldn't.
I think it'd last about a week.
Mm.
You know, even at the Renaissance fairs, they got porta potties.
Right.
You know, the channel, PBS has a series coming up that's really interesting. It's called Victorian Slum Neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Oh.
You know how they always have, like, Downton Abbey and all of these shows of the high society?
Yeah.
This is going to be the lowbrow end of it.
Yeah.
I think that would be probably more interesting.
It might be because it's more down to earth as to what those people had to go through to survive.
Sure. You know, it's kind of like, that's like if you ever watched the movie Gangs of New York. It kind of brings it to this point where it's like, really, this is what they were like, you know. I I often wonder, you know, like it would be interesting to be transported back for a day.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. You know, well, this is the whole theme of Outlander, you know, and that did go back to James II. I'm telling you, I thought they got rid of James II and then that ended the whole thing, but whatever. Or he was James II to England, James VII for Scotland. But the whole thing was, oh yeah, so I saw this interview. That was on Starz. That was a great series. And oddly written by an American. However, you know, again, and people, you'll appreciate this one, Gary, I think. People, I don't watch much TV at all. And people have to, person after person came up to me like, oh my God, there's a new series. You got to watch it because this is something that would happen to you, David. Gal, you and her husband are on a honeymoon or whatever up in Inverness, and they, maybe it was May Day or something, whatever it was. They were doing this little dance around. These folks were doing Druid women were doing this dance around a standing stone, and it sort of electrified it or whatever. She had dropped something. They were just witnessing it and had to go back and pick it up. She touched the standing stone and, of course, sort of got electrified, like, you know, fainted, woke up, and only to be in the year 1742, rather. And so it was, you know, it caught fire. Everybody loved this series. So I saw an interview with some of the actors, and they actually echoed exactly what you said, because they're like, oh, yeah, did you ever really want to do this? It's so realistic and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, no, I wouldn't last a week.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't last a week back in that kind of living. Yeah, it's brutal.
Oh, yeah. You think about it, and you know how people say, I live close to the land. You're living in the land.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yep.
You know, you died because you scratched yourself.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. How did he die? Well, he got a scratch. That was it. He's gone.
Just like, you know how people nowadays, you know, yuppies, or we don't have yuppies anymore, whatever they're called nowadays, whatever the modern version of a yuppie is, goes down to these eco vacation places in Central and South America, right? And you're now, instead of being in a Hilton, you're in a hut in the trees in the Amazon. Well, guess what? All these people come back with insects that bore into their skin.
Oh, yeah, those damn flies.
Oh, yeah. No, I know people right here in Westerly that it happened to.
Oh,
yeah.
It's quite common.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They went down there and they came back and they're like, there's something really wrong with my skin. And they go to the doctor and they literally go in with a lancet and pull out a bug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll stay at the Hilton or the Ramada or...
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay. I want the place that's sanitized.
Yeah.
Usually if I travel, it's north, not south, because it's kind of like, I'm not a big, I believe bugs are wonderful and we need them everywhere. So are reptiles. But when you go north, there are far less reptiles and bugs.
True.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a phobia, okay? But up north, even the bugs have a season.
That's right.
From literally, they come in May, and they last from, like, right after Mother's Day till Father's Day, and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you get north of New England, north of Massachusetts, so you get into, like, Maine or New Hampshire, and it's like the bugs have a one-month, you know, period where they're here, and you can almost time them, so they're not allowed to stay around past Father's Day. Cause
yeah.
I'll tell you what. Fly season is, and we've only got six poisonous snakes in the 6-state region here, and 2 of them you'll never see. So it's kind of like you're fairly safe unless somebody brings something in.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
You start going south of the Mason-Dixon line, and things start creeping and crawling.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Oh, no doubt about that.
I don't remember the last time Westerly had a scorpion attack.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's one of the benefits here. We actually can enjoy the woods. Like I said, when I was in Florida, because I'm being a New Englander, I'd love to be outside. I learned quickly there, outside of going to the beach, there's a reason why people aren't in the so-called woods there, and it's not because it's just sort of like there's a lot of swampiness to it because of all the bugs and alligators. And and I mean, that's one thing they teach you right off the bat. It's everywhere down there, of learning the poisonous snakes and the poisonous insects.
Well, they got those little tiny rattlesnakes. They're more dangerous than the big ones we got up here. And then they've got coral snakes. They've got, you name it, down there.
One of the big things was you had to learn the difference between a coral snake and the other one.
And
is that
corn the, snake.
Yeah,
yeah,
the pattern of the of its colors.
They're backwards.
I sort of forget it all now, but.
You brought up something interesting. Hang on. I don't know if you guys heard that we were going to get Snake Island up here.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Quabbin Reservoir, which is huge. There was an island that they wanted to reintroduce rattlers to the area.
I heard that.
What a brilliant idea.
There were like 1,000 rattlers and placed them on Snake Island. Only thing is, there's a season where things dry out. You can get from Snake Island to the shore.
Mm.
The other problem was snakes do float. They'll go on things. They swim.
They can swim because we lived in the West and we walked into a whole nest of rattlers when we were fishing, and they were all out in the water and they were carrying back pink meat. Oh, guess where they found that? I don't know. But they were everywhere.
Anyway, Snake Island finally got vetoed and voted down.
Good.
Excellent.
But it was part of our wildlife, fishery, and game department that decided we were going to create Snake Island. And I'm going, like, wonderful. You know, we want to reintroduce this type of rattler to the area. And I'm thinking, look, you tried that with the, what are those cats there? The
Fisher cats,
yeah.
You tried it with certain frogs. You tried it, and it's never worked.
No.
Everything they tried always ended up biting them in the butt.
Yeah.
You know, the fisher cats were introduced because the turkey population got too high in Connecticut. Only thing is, the fisher cats did not listen when it came to the border of Connecticut and Massachusetts.
And Rhode Island. Gary, they tried to tell us, get this, they can't cross water. Okay, it's a fisher cat. You know, for the folks that don't know, it looks like a big weasel, but 10 times more
vicious.
They're
huge. They're not just, like, even close to the weasel size, those, because these things, they're big.
But it's in the weasel family. They are vicious. They're unbelievably vicious, and they're not afraid of anything.
They're actually related to badgers.
Yeah.
Correct.
And everybody knows a badger can actually kill a grizzly bear.
And the thing is that these, one, guess what? It freezes in New England, and you can just, even if they couldn't swim, but not only that, guess what? We have bridges that cross rivers, and they cross the bridges, or however they get across. It wasn't a barrier at all for these animals.
No,
it's ridiculous. Oh, yeah.
So we keep introducing these species to eradicate the other species.
Yeah.
You know, and then they kind of get out of hand. We like messing with the natural balance.
Yep.
By the way, last time I checked, the turkey population would limit itself at some point. You know, what happens is, like, I have a huge turkey population here.
Mm-hmm.
This year, my brother-in-law came over one afternoon, and I told him, I said, I've got about 50 turkeys. We call this the Turkey Superhighway. And he said, no, you're exaggerating. He sat here for 20 minutes watching turkeys go by. I mean, literally. Okay? But I do know that one bad winter and half of my turkey, I've seen the turkey flock disappear.
Oh.
You know, it's a natural state.
Right.
So we don't need to bring the fisher cat in to clean out the turkey and then bring in something else to clean out the fisher cat.
Yeah, interestingly, we just have had one introduced to me and my neighbor, our properties, excitedly, my neighbor was telling us, there's a tom turkey and three females, which I'm like, that's a sort of a tiny little pod, little flock. And sure enough, when I came home from work last night, you know, say 6:30, whatever-ish, there they were. And I've already put, because my lettuce is booming with this lettuce-type weather, cool and rainy, Usually it's deer I have to watch out for, so I put all the lawn furniture around my raised bed to protect it. But luckily, because I was in a panic thinking, well, that's certainly not going to stop turkeys if they want to get my lettuce. But at this point, they're just pecking away at the insects, I believe.
Yeah, they're really not into the vegetation.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I've got a huge flock here, and they're really not. They're not interested in. They're more interested in grain or dry. You know, they love acorns, by the way.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. Come visit us. The whole bunch of gigantic trees.
By the way, they're very good for the ground. They scratch the ground.
Oh.
Benefits. The turkeys have been. And they'll scratch the ground looking for bugs, and it looks like somebody raked the area.
Yeah.
And the poison ivy there, they'll just literally eat the poison ivy.
Wow.
Yeah. So consider yourself lucky. I don't believe that funk in your own guard your lettuce. Nasty.
They
but
are. Right. You know, some of these things are kind of interesting in that the more north you go, the more rural it is, or less people, less population density. However, down here we actually have beyond the coyotes, we have coy wolves, wolves,
yeah.
And mountain lions.
And bears.
And bear, yeah.
So their population has been moving too, but not as an urban bear.
Yeah. Yep.
So picture a video of a mother bear with four cubs. Four little cubs in it right here in Rhode Island. Crossing the street.
Well, last night the news they were showing that there's a one-year-old bear in a tree in downtown Worcester. Okay, a bear. He's a Chinese buster.
He was eating out.
Wow. Yeah.
They got to eat out sometime. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Let's say a few years back when we had that waist high. For most of the winter, it was getting pretty scary, and, you know, in the woods where most of these things came out. Right here, Judy, it was Quambach in Bridgewater in Connecticut. There was a kill right there where people witnessed a lion chase down and kill a deer.
A legend.
Yeah. The more exotic pet that.
Reasoning behind why they will never admit to mountain
lion. Yeah, it was something like they couldn't do construction or something.
It stops building permits because mountain lions are federally protected.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly. So officially, the eastern mountain lion is extinct.
Right.
And yet they're all over the place.
Right. They don't need to build your house in the woods.
Right next to where the alleged mountain lion.
Right by the den.
Yeah, well,
alleged mountain lions. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, we've got alleged mountain lions here. It's wild.
The alleged one.
That's one cryptoid that isn't. It's here.
Oh, that one. That's not a cryptoid. That one's actually physical, born and bred. And then with the coyote thing, there's been this big fuss in New London, Connecticut, which is. It's a small city. It's a very urban sort of city. Yeah. And so they have this, you know, wily coyote running through living in downtown London. And the take that the town has is, you guys have got to adjust to the coyote. Because people want this thing taken out because of small pets, kids, or elderly women, whatever. You know, it's crazy. So they had this thing in the New London newspaper about how we had to adjust to this coyote.
Uh-huh.
Of course, at first they were saying, oh, no, it's not there. No, trot down the middle of the road. If, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the nice people in the state of Rhode Island actually saved the coyote's life because they wanted people, or the, I guess, the police or whatever, to go in and kill this coyote. But the coyote had been living off everybody. Everybody had been feeding it. I don't know how long. And it had a whole territory. And it would go from house to house, and people would put out food for it. So it was beautiful. I mean, it was nice and fat and shiny. And it was running all over town. And it didn't seem to be aggressive. Well, you know, it's like, a regular dog, or the coy dog. My daughter had a coy dog for years, and she was the best pet she ever had. She said, they're so, it's like you're their family, so if you're their family, they're not going to harm you, because, you know, they'll protect you. But anyway, the whole town got up in arms because they were going to send in kill this poor coyote. Everybody had videos of it in their yard eating. And so people race came and said, well, I guess we can't kill it then. And they killed eating good.
Yeah. You know, at least it's in harmony. you know, that's kind of like people figured out, like, okay, we can live with it and figure out how to do it. Unfortunately, people move from, you know, an tight urban area and they get into the woods a bit more, or even in an urban area like that, the first thing they want to do is get used to it, will kill it.
Mm-hmm.
Not like we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Packed, especially across the river from me. Night, especially like right about this time of year, they have their pups.
Yep.
And you go out, you'll hear them howling.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of eerie. I usually go out on my deck when the mist is rolling and do the Dracula thing. Oh, it's my children of the night.
Yeah. We had a battle, and it was right in Stonington, as a matter of fact, where we had the cattle. At night, in the evening, when my daughter was doing chores and stuff, I would sit there and you could watch the whole pack come out into the hay field beside the house. And they would, like you know, they would chase each other. They were leaping through the air. They were awesome to watch, and all the pups running back and forth. And then they'd all start their howling, and they'd all start taking off. And when it got dust, really, they would head right back into the woods again because they were gone. But, I mean, they would just leave them alone, and they never bothered anything or anybody out there.
What they're supposed to do. It's kind of like everything is a natural order. We messed the order up.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, right now in New England, there are more trees than there were back in the 1800s. There are more forests than land, even though they're not big.
Correct.
Somehow, these things have all this room and area to run. There happen to be lawns in the middle.
I am so glad.
Because I lived in the West. In the West, we had everything. We had all kinds of stuff.
Said that, Gary, because all you hear, this weird, I don't want to say like a urban legend or whatever, they'll say, we broke down all their habitat. Look around. Anybody who lives in New England, out of, say, southwestern Connecticut, or New York, where it gets kind of New York-y, it's a big forest.
Okay.
With, you know, fly over it. Green, the whole thing. And
New England stands for stone walls, right?
Right.
If you figure out, you can see where, oh, here's a big square that has stone walls around it, which means the trees have been cut there. They remove the stone, pile them as walls, so they could use it as fields.
Right.
So this was all, you know, most of your growth in New England is less than 60 years old, 60 to 70 years old. This is all grown forest.
That's right.
Unless you go way north, and most of that was paper territory, you're not going to find full-growth forests in England.
No. It's only like 400 acres, I think, somewhere in Connecticut. That's actually old-growth. That's preserved. Everything else was pretty much cut down. The Native Americans in this area had used clear cutting anyway. It hasn't been this forested in a long time. And is it as tall as other parts of the country? Maybe not, but it's real forest. spiritual realm. I didn't really get to go, guys, but they're like angels. Angels know who angels are. They know what they are. They know what their job is. And, you know, the messengers of God and then some. And, you know, take all the different levels. And then you've got humans. We don't know who we are, what we are. We know we've got major problems. And we're trying to, you know, act morally so we can say get into heaven type of thing, or however you want to express that in any religion. But there's something about humans that's just defective. We're not at the animal level, but we're not at the angel level. We're
That's because we have a duality. You have a, whenever you have a creature that has both intelligence and a survival instinct going at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it's always going to be a battle internally.
Right.
One side says reason, love, and caring, and the other side says
kill,
fire, warm, stay alive. So
yeah.
The stay alive
right.
part will go after the nice one to get what they have. So, you know, that's the whole power deal.
Right.
Well, the most dangerous animal on earth is man.
Yeah, because we're really scrawny little creatures that can kill big things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and we do.
Yeah, for fun. You know, you get a 160-pound person out there who wants to go kill a rhinoceros, which is a ton and a half.
Right.
And they want it because they want a horn. I mean, God.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, at least the hyena is going to kill it and eat it. We're just going to take the horn and go. We don't make a lot of sense. Why do we do that? Because we can show we're more powerful than a 2-ton animal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know.
The good thing about, my wife just chimed in and said, the good thing about the coyote, at least they eat what they kill.
Yeah.
Right.
So, they make
yep.
more sense.
Nature very seldom wastes anything.
Right.
And then there's us.
Right.
All you got to do is go to the dump and see how much is wasted. I forget
right.
what they said the tonnage was of people a day in this country, just this country, who waste food.
That reminds me of that wonderful animation that I posted on Facebook. I don't know. I think when Facebook first started, somebody, I don't know even who made it, and it was like, it showed like man from beginning of time as an animation now. And going through time, it was, I watched it over and over and over because it would make me laugh so hard, but it was so true and so sad.
Mm.
And so the end of it all, it, you know, going through from caveman to womp and his wife with a head and dragging her along to basically ending up on a throne in a gigantic, the world had become a garbage heap and he was on a throne on top of it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, God. Anyhow.
Well, it's, been a yep. fun, it's been a fun morning.
It was fun.
Yeah, well, tell everybody how to get a hold of you.
Sure. You can call at 508-943-9058 or check me out on the web,
getstreet.com. Yep.
And tomorrow night, Thursday night, I'll be in North Hamlin at the Bluebird Cafe, which is unfortunately sold out.
Blue Bonnet? Is it Blue Bonnet Cafe?
Blue Bonnet. There you go. Yeah, that's it. Friday night I'll be at the Italian Club in Southbridge, which is unfortunately sold out. But
wow.
Check out the web for more events.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah. Just go
Great.
To those listings of new events, and you'll see lots
yep.
listed there. Great. Thanks so much, Gary.
Take care.
You guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Oh,
you
well.
See why
it's always it's, fun to have Gary on.
It
I'll
is.
Tell
you
that.
Why they be. Oh, his shows always sell out because he's just a great guy. And
oh, yeah. And he's a great psychic medium, too. So
that's right.
All right. Well, I will let you go then because it's time for you to say goodbye.
Okay. Okay, Miss Bonnie. This is Bonnie from Romper Room. Time to say goodbye. Okay, Judy, thanks so much. And thank you, Karen McKinstry, for another great episode of The Unknown Zone. And we'll see you all again next week for another hour of Unknown.